Okay, everybody. I think we've got about 10 people on the call, and there could be another 10 or so joining. I'm here. This is Ian Griffin, hosting the Silicon Valley Speechwriters Roundtable conference call from the Mayflower Hotel in Washington, D.C., at the end of the first day of the Reagan Speechwriters Conference for 2014. And we have three of the presenters in the room, with a fourth one expected any minute. And I'm going to quickly introduce them because it's 7:15 on the East Coast, and a couple of people have to leave in 15 minutes. So I was lucky to get them for the first 15 minutes of the call. After they leave, I'll be here with a couple of other people, and we'll open up the lines for questions and discussions. But the first 15 minutes, I want to start by introducing David Murray, who's the MC of the conference, who opened it this morning at 9 o'clock, and you introduce the keynote of this morning, John Favreau. So, David, welcome to the Silicon Valley Speechwriters, and can you give us your impressions of what it's been like to host today?
Yeah, nice to be here. How is everybody? I hope you're well. It's been a good day. It's been an energy. I've been involved in this conference for like more than 20 years, so I have some comparative data on a longitudinal study here, and it's been a good, energetic day. John Favreau, who he's been on the speaker circuit for a while, and I kind of expected him to be sort of too polished by half and us getting some sort of canned stuff from him, and I thought he was much more interactive and revealing than I expected. So he was fun. I'll just share a few things. What I've done is just kind of starred some highlights from my notes from today. Favreau said that the first time he met with President Obama, when he was the first day that Obama was a senator or something around that time, Obama said to him, he said, "Hey, Favs," he said, "I'm a writer too, and sometimes the muse strikes and sometimes it doesn't. And if it doesn't tonight, come back to me in the morning and we'll work on this speech together." And he said that's how his partnership with Obama was for 8 years after that, and I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. We don't have a lot of CEOs telling us that kind of thing. He told a moving story about Ann Nixon Cooper. You remember the 10 million year old woman,
106
year old woman who was mentioned in the acceptance speech after he won the presidency. He called her that night, I guess,
before the speech.
Before the speech, and asked her permission to use her story in the speech for all the change she had witnessed, voting rights, women's rights, all over all these years. And she there was a pause on the phone, and then she said, "Will this be on television?" And then he said, "Yes, it would be on television." And she said, "Which channel?" And then she said that she was so proud of him and so proud of us, and she started to cry, and he started to cry, and then most of the people in the room started to cry, and everybody's been crying ever since. But so he said that there's a lot of grinding days as a presidential speechwriter. There's a lot of bad days. There's a lot of boring days, but that was one day that that he would never forget. This is really insightful. He said there's two kinds of speakers, and he was kind of coming from this to this from his burgeoning speechwriting business now. He said there's two kinds of speakers that you work for. There are those who have an inkling about what they want to say, and then there are those who just know what they want the audience to think about them when they're done talking. And he's new, we think of him as this guy who's been an experienced speechwriter, but he really has only experienced one kind of speechwriting, and so he's kind of new to clients, and he was kind of hilariously dismissive of that second kind of speaker who just wants to leave an impression. And I kind of wanted to say, John, you're going to have to deal with a lot more of those people as you go. He told the speechwriters which wouldn't have mattered. He told the speechwriters what they know, which is that you need to have access to your speaker and to be in meetings with speakers, which of course wouldn't mean anything coming from any of the rest of us, but I kind of had this feeling that some of them were writing this down to tell their bosses that John Favreau said that they need access to their speakers. He said that he and Obama didn't have much grounding in professional rhetoric and in the rhetoric, sort of the discipline of rhetoric. They never knew if they were using the rule of three, and they were kind of not versed in that. They were just kind of going by their instinct. And a reporter called them after the Iowa acceptance speech and asked, "So did you guys mean to write that speech in iambic pentameter?" And Favreau said, "What?" Because he had no idea they'd done that. He wouldn't even recognize it if they had. Let's see. He basically said that after the high profile of the presidency, the incredibly high profile of writing these speeches, his quote was, "It's kind of hard for me to get worked up over the corporate clients and their speeches." And he sees the corporate clients, saying, "Oh my gosh, part of this speech might be quoted in the newspaper," and he kind of thinks, "What's the matter with you know?" So I kind of think he's in for an awakening a little bit with the corporate people, and he keeps working with corporate people for a while. He's got some learning to do, but he was really open and interesting, and he allowed for some insight. The last thing on Favreau is he said that he has the track changes. Obama, his race speech in Philadelphia, he really wrote most of that speech himself, and Favreau said he wrote only the parts that any politician could have delivered, and that Obama wrote all of the really important parts. He said, "I have the track changes version of Barack Obama's race speech, which is really cool because it's mostly track changes." Yeah. He should hold on to that. That thing should go to the Smithsonian, I'd say. Anyway, so that was him.
Could I interrupt?
Oh, yeah.
Let's hear from...
Yes.
Thanks for the overview there. Now, we've got four other people in the room. Fletcher Dean, who was part of the pre-conference workshops, also did a presentation today on thought leadership. So, Fletch, why don't you give it? And he's the well-known author of 10 Steps to Writing a Vital Speech.
A Vital Speech, which I just have to mention is available on Amazon, by the way. I just walked in to the conference, so I don't know what Dave has covered on John Favreau, but that was clearly the highlight for me. I thought it was interesting. He talked a lot about story and a lot about putting story into the speech, which I thought was interesting because one of the things that the Obama administration has been criticized about is not having a story at all, of losing their story over time. So I was really interested to hear him talk about stories within a speech, but not the whole narrative of the Obama administration and what they were trying to do. I wish he had addressed that a little bit. But it was one of those things that I tried to touch on in a session I did on thought leadership, which was, you know, kind of develop where you're trying to go as a company, what the issues are, and be relentless about pushing that out. Go out there every day, find those podiums where your audiences are, and drive it home every day with your executives and hit it again and again and again in a very consistent and efficient way. And it's not only good for the organization because it makes consistency of message, but it's also good for the speechwriter and the speechwriting team because you cut down on this speech of the day kind of event where, you know, you may write four speeches a month and they're all on different topics. And you have to think about what kind of message is that sending to the audience. And I think that's kind of where the Obama administration got for a while. They were trying to do so much that they lost the overarching narrative. Having said that, John Favreau was, I think, one of the best keynote speakers that we've had in a while. He reminded me of Terry Edmonds quite a bit, who was President Clinton's chief speechwriter for a while. Just very humble and humble to be in that position. And Terry did something similar a few years ago when he held up a speech from a speech page he had given to President Clinton. And he showed us all the words that had been marked out on that one page. And there were only three words remaining. And those three words were Vice President Gore. So, you know, at the end of the day, I felt pretty good, when my CEO only throws up on half of my speech. And I have more than three words that survive. So I felt pretty good about that. But I think his point, what is the story is well taken. I don't think we as, especially corporate speechwriters, are very good about telling our organization's story. We're very good about selling individual products, but we're not good at saying why we're here. Why does this company exist? And that's vital to the longevity of an organization, because even analysts and retirees and all your community need to know that. They need to know that story of why you exist. So that was a reminder to me to go back and really hit that hard within our own organization. One of his other points was about honesty and authenticity and how important that is to a speech. And it's one of the things that was hit upon in the last panel of the day, which was the Cicero Award winners, judges, talking about what makes up a great speech, an award-winning speech. And we hit on this again and again. It was that authentic. Who else can give this speech? If someone else can give that speech, it's probably not really that authentic. And the best ones over the past several years have been so authentic to the speaker that you read it and you say, wow, that is so personal. No one else in the world could give that particular speech. And I think that's a really good lesson for us, to go back and try to put more authenticity into a speech. I mean, I write in the corporate world all the time, and it's very typical when we're talking about issues like sustainability and energy to talk in any kind of authentic voice. But that's our job as speechwriters. So it was a lesson to me to go back and see how much more authenticity I can put into a speech. And his last point was a point that carried over to a lot of speechwriters. I talked to a couple, and they all said this point was what made an impression on them. And he said, never lose your idealism. In fact, if a speechwriter with the European Union said, boy, that really hit home for me, because we're getting hit left and right and left, even about our existence. And she said, that's what I took away from his whole talk, was never lose your idealism about why you're there and what you're trying to do. One of the other points, I don't know if they hit upon this or not, but I really liked it. He's talking about the interaction with your principal who's doing the speaking. And we all have that problem of getting enough face time, and CEOs don't want to give you that face time because they don't think it's that important. But he said, you know, if the President of the United States has time to think about his speech, then so do you. If the leader of the free world, who's fighting two wars and is dealing with all kinds of issues, has time, then we're pretty sure your CEO does too. That was a good line. And go back and, you know, you're able to push. I was really interested to hear him talk about one of his most inspirational speeches, which was the RFK speech that Robert F. Kennedy gave in Indianapolis, 1968, on the day Martin Luther King was killed. If you don't know that speech, I encourage you to go back and look at it. It is a fantastic speech because it does so much in just about 5-6 minutes. And it's all impromptu. He threw away his original speech as he's coming to the podium because he asked, you know, does the audience know that Martin Luther King is dead? And they say no. And he realizes he's the one who has to deliver this news to a largely African-American audience in inner city in Indianapolis. And he did a wonderful job with it. It's a beautiful speech that goes all the way from informing the audience about what has happened to creating understanding and eliciting action at the very end. So if you're really looking for a speech that does everything all at once, that was a good one. I'm glad he mentioned it, because at the end of the Martin Luther King speech, RFK tells the audience very simply, I want you to go home. I want you to go home and pray for the country. And the lesson, of course, is they did go home. It was the only major city in the U.S. that did not have riots that day. And that's the power of a really good speech.
Okay, thanks. We now have Rosemary King, and I apologize again if you've just joined. It's 7:30 at night on the East Coast. These people are keeping their dinner guests waiting downstairs.